Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenwill. And welcome to a very special episode, one of three that we'll be able to do this year. This is our spoiler-free preview of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. So if you are excited for the movie and you want a little bit of context and information about it, but you don't want any spoilers, this is a safe space.
But quickly, I loved it so much. I loved it so much. And that's the most important takeaway. Today is always unique because when we walk out of the theater the night of the premiere, it's like 11 p.m., we want to record our initial reactions episode always because we want just that, the initial reaction to it. The weird thing, though, is that that actually comes out next week. Mm-hmm. And because last week was a scripted saga so far, this is the first time in a while where we're actually catching up with people. Yeah. And it's weird for us because we got to remember all the things we said about last night's episode, which actually airs next week, and kind of reverse time here. But I'm excited about this. I'm really excited about this. You can go check our social media reaction. We freaking loved the movie. Welcome to our cool, vibey, speakeasy hotel. It's got the WandaVision flair. It's got the, I don't know, like I'm interrogating you flair. But we're excited to be in Hollywood, California again, back where we just need to be sometimes. And I wanted to start off today by telling you a little bit of a catch-up here on my rewatch journey and my rewatch outside of the MCU journey. Yeah. Because in the last week, and I've been talking about this on Slack, for whatever reason, I think because football is over for me and hockey was in a break and I haven't been playing as much Warzone or as much video games, Annika and I have had so much time to watch film. Mm-hmm. And in the last week alone, I've watched The Menu, Last of Us Episode 3, which kicked off my week. You know, I thought, oh, I'll watch a fun zombie show. Yikes. It left me contemplating life for like 6 days straight. Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which I showed Annika, Devotion, and then Black Adam. So really quickly, I'm going to do a quick 30-second review of each one. In next week's episode, we actually tease an outlet for some of this stuff. Yeah, so if you're a longtime Friends from Work listener, you're going to want to stay around to the end of next week's episode because we have maybe a few things we can explore and how we can talk about these things. Yeah. But in the short term, what is this? Is it an actual timer?
Let's go.
Okay, so 30 seconds? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I watched The Last of Us Episode 3. Absolutely rips your heart out. My favorite shows are the ones where you come to the show for one thing and then you leave because the writers and directors have convinced you of a totally different thing. And I came to that show being like, oh, I played the video game. It'd be fun to learn about that post-apocalyptic world and see some zombies. And I left being like, wow, I care about the characters and I'm rethinking life. This had nothing to do with zombies. And I actually liked that.
Yeah. Wow. That's so impressive. I can't do that. I have to say, there's Anytime you hear Max Richter kick in, you know that you're about to just experience an emotional gut punch. Mm-hmm. Like, Candace and I were sitting there watching that episode, and already, I mean, by the time you get to that scene, it's just a beautiful, like, heart-wrenching episode of television. Like, one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen. And then you hear On the Nature of Daylight start to come in, and it's like, oh my god.
And you
gosh.
Think about Arrival.
Well, I mean, Arrival or, I mean, it's.
Is it also Shutter Island?
Shutter Island. Yeah.
Okay, I also watched The Menu, which I'm not going to get into fully here because I have 30 seconds, but also because this might be one of the movies you and I talk about on the podcast. But, you know, the movie, The Menu, doesn't reinvent the genre, but it's so topical with its social commentary, especially with this podcast, what this podcast has always talked about. And that was the most delightful part. So that's what I'm going to want to get into when we actually cover the movie in length.
Well, and it's funny because I should have tried to use that last 2 seconds. Impressive again. It's funny because you say it doesn't quite reinvent the genre. And I think what I loved about it, and one of the reasons why you are already going to watch it, but why I was kind of pressuring you to get to it because I wanted to talk about it with you, is because I don't even know what the genre is. Like, from the trailers, you think, like, oh, this is like a thriller comedy. Kind of a thing. Or, yeah, like, but, yeah, I guess it is a dark, it's a dark comedy more than anything. But, yeah, it's just a really unique
That's
movie.
Kind of the point, honestly, of the whole film, is that you don't know what the genre is, kind of. I watched Everything Everywhere All at Once. Absolutely the most heartwarming thing I've seen in a while. Mm-hmm. I was in tears, legitimately. I think it hits you differently when you have a wife, a family, child, etc. Mm-hmm. And it really hit me. We loved it. What a spectacular movie. I know a ton of people on our Slack. It has like a cult following even amongst our listeners. Spectacular. It's this year's Parasite for me, where I'm hoping it pulls out the best picture for way more than just that I liked it reasons.
Right.
I'm doing great, by the way. I'm not spoiling anything yet, but Everything Everywhere All at Once might be the movie to kick off some coverage of other films for us.
Because it is nominated for Best Picture, like you said.
95% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, the Oscars are in just over a month. I think it would be fun to talk about.
So, again, this is back-to-back-to-back nights. Then I wanted to show Annika The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which we actually got a chance to see a screener like 9 months ago together in Austin. Yeah. Randomly, that Candace had set up.
That's true. That was like March or April, right?
Really? Yeah. Really, really, really funny. But it's not just that it's funny. It's really creative in the kind of comedy it is. It's not slapstick. It's like a comedy that's built on being like highbrow, self-aware. And it's very strange. Yeah. Like, to actually watch Pedro Pascal and Nick Cage be that aware in what they're talking about. By the way, Pedro Pascal, I found out, is a real actual Nicolas Cage fan, which is amazing. I didn't make this one. But I was watching that and The Last of Us, and that then inspired me. That's not as emotional, by the way, but inspired me to think, like, dude, I want Pedro in the MCU. So I tweeted that. How can we get Pedro Pascal in the MCU, and what role could he play? And that actually started some fun discussion. So I watched Devotion. I'll start my own timer for your sake. This I definitely don't need to talk about because you can go to the movie club if you're on Friends From Work Plus, and you can listen to my full review of that. It's a good movie, not a great movie, but I watch it to learn what I can learn about Jonathan Majors' acting and the variety he can bring to his acting before Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, and I found it really helpful. And then at the end of that movie, I found myself getting choked up after all of it. It's based on a true story. I'd say it's like an 8 out of 10. Good movie, not unbelievable, but that was fun and also heartwarming and emotional. I made it again. Wow. And then lastly, and don't start the timer on this, you and I need to do an actual episode on the fact that I watched Black Adam and actually what that means for the film industry. What an abomination of a movie. Oh my gosh, it's so bad. Oh no. And it's not just bad. It's bad in that I legit get concerned. Like, when Martin Scorsese and James Cameron come out and rip superhero movies, this is why. And I actually think it hurts Kevin Feige's case in making a movie because these get lumped together. Like, Ant-Man and the Wasp will get lumped together with Black Adam as a superhero movie. And they're not even close to the same conversation, you actually said something to me off air that I thought was so true. It's like Black Adam's not fun bad. It's soulless bad. Yeah. There's no – you've brought this up before. You may not like Multiverse of Madness, but at least when you're watching it, you can feel that Sam Raimi and Mike Waldron cared about what they were doing. Like right. They were trying their best, whether you like it or not.
Right.
I watched Black Adam. I'm like, does anybody care? Like, yeah. Do the actors care? Do the directors care? I don't know. It literally feels like everyone's walking through just a CGI fest. And there's no – it's crazy. Anyways, I'm sorry if you love that movie. But it's crazy to me.
It's – I feel like they fed a lot of data to a bot and had it right.
That's like the new trend. They probably did.
Yeah, I mean – and I mean – which, I don't know. I mean, I guess they needed to save the budget on writers because, geez, that movie, like within a week or two, it was already clear that it was going to essentially be a loss.
Yeah, they basically bailed on it.
Which is wild because by some metrics, Dwayne Johnson is the biggest movie star in the world. So it's it.
And I like him. I do like him.
Yeah, no, but and this is not.
He just coasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
The entire film, he has this look.
Man, okay, you know what?
That's all he does.
You know what's interesting about that, though? And we'll get to, we'll get to this is where you have to be watching video.
sorry.
Yeah. This is we'll get to this whenever we talk about Quantumania here in a moment, but the thing that has consistently separated Marvel from not just DC, but other kind of franchise things like this in recent years. And again, Marvel, it's not like this has always 100% happened with Marvel, nor has it 100% not happened with other properties. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that the thing that makes Marvel unique is how consistently the actors and really the creators in general, it feels like they're bought in. Mm-hmm. And I think like what I've noticed, we recently watched for the first time the other night, the DC League of Super Pets movie, the animated movie. Yeah. And one, what's hilarious, and he's never responded like this before, but our dog is obsessed with it. Something about the way they represent dogs, representation matters.
Accurate.
He will get on, like you turn it on and he will get on the couch, center himself and just watch that movie. And they have like squeaky toys as an element. And every time he's like just locked, it's the most I've ever seen him like be into entertainment.
That's
but
funny.
One thing I noticed in that even, because it's got like a crazy cast in terms of voice actors, and I noticed that like Dwayne Johnson in that movie, he's the lead, is also kind of phoning it in. Like everyone else is doing great work. John Krasinski plays Superman, like a lot of really just kind of fun appearances. And I like Dwayne Johnson, and I think that he's turned in some really great performances and other things, so I'm not saying that he doesn't have the ability. But it's funny to me because these movies came out not that far from each other, and he at the time was kind of setting himself up as like, I'm going all in with DC, and he was promoting it really hard. But then like you actually see the creative energy that even he's bringing to it, and then you compare like, and with what he was saying, right? Like, I'm coming into DC, I'm reshaping it, like get ready for the Black Adam era.
There's a new hierarchy.
And it's like you think about that, like how it seems that Dwayne Johnson was trying to set himself up. And then you compare that to some of the central figures of the MCU, even if you don't go RDJ, which is, it's not really fair to compare RDJ to most actors, but like Evans even, like it's just it's a different, and again, that's DC League of Super Pets had plenty of good performances. So I'm not saying that like DC is void of passion. I'm just saying I think that it's so – every time I see stuff like that, every time I see something like Black Adam, that just was cranked out because superhero movies are
big.
That's
what I'm
saying,
though. That's the larger conversation we'll have to have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
that's detrimental.
It's
and in that way, you're almost thankful that it didn't do well.
Right. I mean, because it shows like – yeah, I mean
– that we're better than this.
Well, dude, you know what's – yeah, I mean, it's funny to me because I would even say – and then we can put a pin in this, but to compare Black Adam to even like Let There Be Carnage, which was not a good movie, that's even interesting to me because, I mean, Sony has a lot of the same issues DC does, but, like, even there, I would say, like, you watch it and it's Andy Serkis directing they're trying to do something weird and fun, you know, which is like, you know, that feels appropriate to the Venom character. It's funny how, like, that's a movie that I thought was not good, but I didn't come away.
That's more fun to watch.
Yeah, and I didn't come away, like, depressed about the state of, you know, whereas, like, with a movie like Black Adam, you come away and it's like, oh, man, I don't even want to be around anymore.
So another fun thing on the Friends from Work side is that we've always wanted to – we love the rewatch vibe. And you kind of brought this up last week to me. It's finally becoming – enough time between the time that the Phase 4 stuff came out and now to be considered a rewatch. So we do want to kind of work in maybe an episode per project as a rewatch, just like our old classic ones going forward. I bring that up because I'm currently on – I just finished Far From Home in my rewatch, and so I'm kind of thinking with that context. And I think there could be some really fun episodes now that we've had a couple years on some of these.
Right.
We've watched WandaVision – 4 times to come back and now talk about it. So that will be kind of fun too. On that note, I haven't caught people up on trivia. Right. And so I can do this really quickly, but I had asked what basically a lost lyrics to finish the lyrics to Agatha All Along from WandaVision. And congratulations to Lance actually for getting to this first. And again, this was weeks ago, but she's insidious, so perfidious that you never even noticed, and the pity is. Bitty, 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 bitty. That was the part I was looking for.
That's wild. Lance, you have...
Perfidious. That's why I took note of it.
My respect, because not only did I not know that... I could never in a million years have told you what those words
it's
were.
It's too late to fix anything.
Like, I didn't
know that everything has gone wrong.
I didn't know that those it's were the words Agatha. In the first place, and I certainly could not have memorized them.
Naughty Agatha. Oh, I've listened to Agatha All Along. I could have done that one. I've listened to it so – I just said All Along. I've listened to it so much. and then for this week, okay, trivia time. And this is going to quiz you too. Here we go. Cue the music. What is the name – oh, from Falcon and Winter Soldier. What is the name of the senator that we see Bucky cross off his list, I think, in the first episode? Yeah. So, like, he's making amends, and you get to see him actually cross off the list with one senator in the car, and he freaks her out with the car driving itself.
Right.
What's her name?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then from Spider-Man Far From Home, this is a really fun one, courtesy of my wife, Annika. What cities does Peter travel to in that film? In order. What is the order of his entire trip?
This one I can do.
Including a couple of really hard to pronounce cities.
I know there's the one that would make it difficult for me to actually type up a submission.
Hint, my homeland.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. In more ways than one.
Well, really just the one. I'm Dutch.
Yeah, but also you're from...
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're getting at.
See?
Okay. Kind of two ways.
Yeah.
I see what you're getting at. But it would ruin... Yeah, we can't bring it up. Okay. Here's how we want to structure the rest of today. I literally, like an hour ago, Robbie, asked people, what do you want to hear from a spoiler-free episode? And in 1 hour, if you're watching online, look at this. I got all of these.
Yeah, that's wild.
And so I think let's... do an opening thought on, you know, obviously don't spoil anything from this point on. Give us an opening thought on just big picture. Now that you've had a morning to sleep on it and wake up and think about it, what do you think? And then after that, we can kind of rapid fire these. And I haven't read them either. And then we can just see how much of this we can answer. Last thing, really briefly. There'll be a lot more information on this on our Patreon page, but we are partnering with Adam Tickets for a fun thing. If you are a Friends from Work Plus subscriber, you can get $5 off a ticket right now, which is actually a pretty significant discount.
Yeah.
I think it's only while supplies last. But if you go to our Patreon page, we'll share the information. But if you're going to buy tickets to Ant-Man and the Wasp or to Guardians of the Galaxy, or you're going to go to Ant-Man again or whatever, you might as well use a dope ticketing app that saves you $5. And I'm going to share that code on the Plus page. So check that out with Adam Tickets. And if you are looking to buy tickets through Adam anyways, which is a great app that you can use to get your tickets, you're already using something anyways, check the show notes and click on our referral link. It helps us if you use that link before you buy your tickets, just so they know that we sent you. Okay, let's get into Ant-Man and the Wasp, a spoiler-free preview after a quick word from these sponsors. All right, so last night when we recorded our entire initial reactions episode that's going to come out next week, we truly did not know what anyone else thought other than overhearing a couple of people as we walked out of the theater. This morning, we've had a little bit of hindsight where now we could read a few other tweets, right. And we have sat on a little bit more. And from this point on, by the way, if you don't want to hear anything about it, this is your jumping off point. But we're going to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp, spoiler free. I just want to say I freaking loved it. Like I know on here we're positive a lot and we say that a lot. I like loved it. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was watching, like my level of investment felt like almost pre-Endgame. Like I loved it. So I'll give my overarching thought, but I woke up this morning realizing like I maybe even loved it more than most people. Like you know, that's funny. Like we left certain films. I'm trying to think now, but there's a couple where we left and we were like, whoa, after we saw the reaction, like, ooh, we didn't like it as much as people liked it. Like, right. Oh, people love this more than us. And then like, not to say this is the same level as Black Widow, but we loved Black Widow walking out and then saw some reaction that was, oh, people don't love it as much.
Yeah.
We loved this movie and maybe people are a little more lukewarm on it than we thought, but we loved it. So we were effusive in our praise last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your opening thought?
I mean, yeah, I just had a blast. We were talking on the way to the theater about how there are certain movies in the MCU that you walked out of feeling like so pumped in a very particular way. And I think a lot of that I associate with the very end years of the Infinity Saga, like 2016 to 2019, when it just felt like everything was firing on all cylinders. It felt like there was this like Marvel. There was a bit there where they just couldn't miss. Like it was like everything was fun and funny and driving it forward, and it was like it was wild. Like the you know, going to Spider-Man Homecoming in summer 2017 and then Ragnarok in November. It was just like, oh my gosh.
Black Panther,
Infinity War. Like just wild. And this is the most I've felt like that since that period. Which is not to say it's the best movie since then. That's a different conversation.
But it is very good.
Dude, I mean it's for me immediately in the top three post Endgame films. Like I was beaming.
Yes.
I
grabbed your knee like five times. Like this is, oh my gosh.
I the fun thing for me, like exactly what you were saying, like you walk out sometimes and even movies that I've loved, there are times where I recognize things that other people may not. Like And not because they're bad, but just because, like we've talked about so much of Phase 4 has been these kind of big creative swings. And I was always having to say, like, for example, when people would ask me, like, Multiverse of Madness or Thor Love and Thunder, what did you think? You always have to preface it with the, like, well, it's weird, okay? Just, it's weird, right? But if you like the weird, if you like this kind of Sam Raimi weird, have you seen the Evil Dead movies? Do you like the Evil Dead movies? You're gonna like this. Like, do you like Taika? Do you like really goofy Taika? Do you really like it? Then you're going to like Love and Thunder. And I just didn't feel that way at all last night. Like,
even though that was crazy.
It is weird.
It's the weirdest thing goofy they've done in years.
Yeah, yeah. And
we talk about that so much in next week's episode when you can actually talk about it, because it's hard to explain. Like, the swing is so big stylistically. But even the misses feel like appropriate or charming. It's so strange to explain to us.
So what I want to say before we jump into these questions, which is going to be such a fun way to do this.
Yeah, that can drive the conversation. Yeah.
I I just, because we were just talking about this with Black Adam, I think the thing that delighted me so much was just the clear buy-in of everyone involved.
Which like, makes it so different. We just watched the press conference. It's so different.
Like, first off, just so people know, in case you don't follow this stuff or live in our Slack, one of the big differences for this movie from the other Ant-Man films is on the writing side. Like, we've actually had Peyton Reed direct each of these, the first to finish a trilogy after John Watts, also the first composer to finish one after Giacchino. And we were so curious going into this, okay, like, they have this new writer in Jeff Loveness who wrote this script, just like Michael Waldron solo penned Multiverse of Madness, Jeff Loveness solo penned this. Also, they're both Rick and Morty alum, and so they kind of bring that weird comedy, sci-fi, like trippy thing to the table.
Very much so.
And we were curious, right? Like, yeah, what is it? What does it look like? Like, Peyton Reed has so far directed these two films that fit very much kind of in his prior repertoire of like big budget comedies. Sure. Like, for instance, he did the Yes Man film with Jim Carrey that was like 2007.
Right. And Zoe Deschanel.
Yeah. Like that kind of like, you know, it there's a cleanliness to it. Like it's sleek, you know, like he's kind of had that like more like what we were talking about kind of going into it, even like sort of a steady hand on the wheel guy. Like mm-hmm. he's not I think of all the MCU directors that showed up in the Infinity Saga, he would probably be the one that would have been hardest to identify like his fingerprint, right? Because like in part the creative stuff behind those sure. movies, like it was going to be Edgar Wright wrote the script. He departed the project. Like it was just always hard to figure out what was coming from where. And I think that like just the reason I back up and say all this is I think that what he brought to this film, one, I now kind of know what the Peyton Reed fingerprint is and I really respect it. Mm-hmm. And two, I think mm-hmm. it just set the tone for everything that followed. And you hear that in the press conference because like the Peyton Reed combo with that Jeff Loveness Wild script is I think exactly what
yes.
Thor Love and Thunder and Multiverse of Madness didn't have, you know, again, yes. whether like for better or for worse, like, and I think here
we talk a lot about that balance next week.
Yeah. Yes. And so like one, I love the Jeff Loveness script. I thought it was hilarious. Yes. It was also like really imaginative. Like you said,
so imaginative, like, holy
suspenseful no and all like the best, like gravitas. Like it felt like
you don't know what's actually going to happen yeah. while you're watching the film.
It was. And so in case, again, folks don't know, what's really fun about that is Loveness is already set to write Avengers Kang Dynasty, which is the first Avengers film coming out since Endgame in several years. And so, you know, obviously that's great because we see here that he can work well with a story that involves Kang, but also just I really like what he's bringing anyway.
I'm stoked.
And so anyway, that's just I loved that. I loved their combo, but I also loved listening to the press conference, how much Peyton Reed got into the actual imagining of the quantum realm. Like he went on and on about how like he was looking at actual like stills from high powered microscopes.
Yeah,
and
true.
Like Paul Rudd is saying that he thought that was all like, oh man, that's a really cool concept.
Like storyboarding, yeah.
Yeah, and Peyton Reed was like, no, like this is, like they were doing that with a combination of like going back to like Fifth Element and like Flash Gordon and just doing, like talking about like going to old 80s like heavy metal magazines for visuals, just trying to pull from all of it. And
it's so creative.
Yeah, it's so fun. So fun. And the performances follow that, and that like Beck's score is top notch. The actors are just like firing on all cylinders. It's
the music is unbelievable, and I'm only reserving my thoughts on that because I know one of the questions from one of our Friends from Work Plus people is about that. So I'll get into that in 1 second. I'm not going to repeat everything you just said because I totally agree. I'm going to just take one last chance to wrestle with this idea of like, if this comes out and has like a 72% or a 78%, like why? Because I loved it that much. Mm-hmm. When my opinion was not influenced at all last night, and you'll hear next week, this was, I don't rank things early on, but like yeah. my first experience was definitely top 10 for me. That was a, I love it. I love the imaginative. I love the imagination, I should say. I love the new world building. I love the villain, the actors that played the characters that they're playing, the music. Like, I'm not going to repeat everything, but I loved it. Like, I had a hard time coming up with stuff I don't like. Now, how in the world can I be that effusive in my praise if there are a lot of lukewarm reviews that now I'm seeing? And I was thinking about that this morning. This is my last thought. So if you're worried about the lukewarm reviews, I think it can maybe come from a couple of places. One, it is so, so creative, unique, weird, stylistically quirky. Like, if you were a fan of the way the first two Ant-Man films felt, like if palate cleanser was not a bad word to you, like you were like, yeah, I love how like lighthearted it is. And right. and I'm not bashing that. My mom, Candace, Annika, they love the just like feel good side story nature of the film.
Super accessible.
It's super accessible. I can see how this is like, what am I watching? It does not feel in that way. Okay, it does wrap up the trilogy, but doesn't feel like a continuation of the same exact genre from what it was. This is also just an Ant-Man that's having to take things more seriously in yeah. general. So it is a little bit, not to say it's not funny, because it's still hilarious.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's so good. I think it's so good. But I can see how that turns some people off. Secondly, you know, what's interesting is like, I was walking out of the theater thinking like, this is such an obvious candidate for a movie where the audience score is going to be higher than the critic score. Yeah. We're in Los Angeles right. on the right. premiere night. And just the vibe of the people walking out, like we could overhear a few things, was almost like shocking to you and I.
Yeah.
And just a reminder that there are people out there that are like, I don't know how to say this. I want to be kind, but there are people out there that just don't want to like things. Like they want, like the internet wants to build momentum negatively on something, which is so strange to us because that is the exact opposite of what we want to do. But I'm not saying that to say this isn't actually legitimately good. Yeah. It's legitimately spectacular to me and just so much fun. That's the kicker. It's hard to make a movie that you just have so much fun in and have critics also love it. I'm a little bit surprised that anybody who likes these things, like you like film,
right.
but specifically you like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that you can walk out of that and go like, nah, meh, yeah. like I don't appreciate their effort. Like what?
Man, it's an interesting thing.
It was so much fun.
Like
do people not like just having fun anymore? That's what I was thinking about this morning.
It's funny because on, and you know, I'd be fascinated to see someone do a better study of this than what I can do. But I feel like as Marvel has grown and grown, I mean, Jonathan Majors in the press conference, we tweeted this earlier, he described the MCU as an international pillar of culture, education, and entertainment, you know, like, and, you know, you look at it, right? And you look at the number of, you know, like my little brother was 2 years old when Iron Man came out, you know, and now he's about to graduate high school and he's literally like grown up alongside the MCU. And there are a lot of folks like that, that like this has become a big chunk of their experience with movies. And so I wonder if like as that's happened and more folks are kind of brought into the fold and as critics are having to take these more and more seriously in the amount of at least time and kind of airspace they dedicate to it.
And the goalpost just keeps moving.
Well, and I just wonder if you're getting more and more people that have to cover these movies that wish that they didn't, or like maybe it's like people are putting certain kinds of expectations. I mean, but
this is why we have to talk about the menu.
Yeah.
People are losing the ability to like go back to the joy of the thing. Like we're getting to a point where we hyperanalyze everything that we're not actually enjoying the thing.
Well, and that's like what I want to, you're right. And what I want to clarify.
And that's what we'll get into on that episode.
It's not like, I think people hear that. And this is such an important distinction to me.
Yeah. And I don't want to sound preachy, but.
No. But people can hear that and think, hey, you know, just let people enjoy things. Just like put your critical brain aside and just enjoy everything.
Sure, sure.
And that's not what I'm saying or what we're saying. What we're saying is I think that there is a fundamental difference in the way that we have now taught ourselves to consume things because of the way that the social media interactions happen, where it's like we're now watching a movie to have a take on it. Like, yeah, that's sure. the thing, right? Like, you're watching it and you're thinking, like...
We were literally in a theater of people doing that.
Yeah, I mean, because you go out and you do your social media reactions. I mean, like, that's what you do. And it's like, and if you're not a member of the movie press doing this stuff, then you're doing it on Letterboxd or just doing it on socials anyway. And it's like, you think about as you're watching it, like, I give Candace a hard time. Candace is not an example of this, but I give her a hard time because we'll be watching a movie at home. And like 3/4 of the way in, she starts crafting her Letterboxd review. And I'm always like, no, you just watch the movie and go back. But I just think it's like if we're already thinking about the product that this movie is going to give us in this like my analysis of it that I can now share with everyone. Or where does this move the MCU along? And how does that like – it's just
–
it's not going to be a fun way to consume anything, because it is like, just respond to it. Like, honestly, like enjoy it. And I think that I'm not being preachy. I'm talking to myself and that like,
be willing to let yourself have fun with it.
This has been a conversation you and I have been having just personally, like internally for the past couple months, where it's like, man, it's exhausting trying to figure out like what you should think about a thing. Just think the thing that you think, like enjoy it. And so like my final note before we jump into like,
I love Robbie Rants.
The questions, this is an epic Robbie Rant.
No, but I totally agree with everything you're saying. Obviously.
I would say, and this sounds like, I don't mean this to sound pandering, because this is actually what I've done for this particular film. And I've really enjoyed it already. Like, you're listening to this podcast, which is obviously, you know, coloring your perception of the movie you're going to see.
Sure.
But, like, this is the first time for a Marvel movie since, gosh, I don't even know how long. I mean, probably way pre-Infinity War even, that I have not, like, searched for any early reactions to stuff other than just, like, what we heard from the theater walking out. And kind of made a point not to, like, and just come into it. And it's so, like, I don't know. It's so much better. Like, I would just encourage people to maybe hold off on that this time. And I don't, like, I don't know how it's going to come out review-wise. Maybe it's going to be 99%, right?
Like, yeah. I think the audience score will be higher than the critic score. And by the way, sorry for this truck that's just backing up constantly right outside the window here. Again, we'll get into this with like the menu. I think I've been wrestling with that exact idea of just even the nature of what we're doing right now.
Right.
Like, I guess I wonder truly what is the benefit other than it's like you can't wait for Christmas.
Like, yeah, if
you can't wait to open your present, so it's like you're just kind of peeking at the label.
Right.
I'm just wondering if like, yeah, I don't want people to stop listening to what we're doing.
But
I guess to some people, there's a level of information that can enhance, like, hey, look out for this thing from like Beck, like be listening for this, because then you'll catch it.
Right.
There's stuff like that. That's really cool. But like, yeah, to go in having heard people be like, it's a meh thing.
Right.
I don't know why that is beneficial. I think go in being like, get to go to these movies ever so often.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. And I can't wait to see where they take me. and then if you don't like it, that's fine.
on the flip side, even like there have been movies that are so, they're sold to me as such a triumph for months and months. And then you watch it.
You're like, okay, that was good.
And it's like, I kind of wish I had gone into this without expectation, like without that kind of, you know, and again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have dialogues about this stuff at all. I'm just saying like, even with our podcast, I think we're trying to be intentional as we're kind of directing it moving forward. Like, I think the point of all of these and the point of this podcast and the community that we've tried to build is it's fun to talk and respond to art together, right? And I know I get like, we get eye rolls whenever we talk about this stuff that way, but it's like, so I'm not saying cut down on that, but I just think it's so much more fun to like sit with a thing and experience it and then share your experience with other people that experienced it rather than us have to immediately jump to like, is it an A or a B? Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down? You know, so right. This is a fun movie for me and yeah, I want people to have fun.
It was so much fun. I have a hard time thinking that I've said this already, but if you are invested in the MCU, you care about Scott Lang, you care about Hank Pym, these characters, and you're curious about where it's going to go in the future, and like you're wondering if they can do something stylistically different, even though they've made 30 films already. Like if you're thinking all these things, I have a hard time thinking you went into this with a fresh mind and left being like, oh, that's dumb. Okay, let's get into some of these questions.
Yes.
So this is going to be – we're going to have to go real rapid fire with these because there's a lot of them. So – and again, we don't want to spoil anything. So in context of everything we just said, we'll keep it real tight. And by the way, I do want to add, I don't think – I'm not going to start a larger discussion. But I don't think, to clarify, this is going to have at all the same polarization of Thor Love and Thunder or Multiverse of Madness. I think there might just be a little more meh or lukewarmness about it. Like I definitely don't see anyone walking out of this and going, I hate this. Whereas like with Multiverse of Madness, because of Wanda and a few other things, I think some people hated it because like you messed up my character.
Right.
I don't think that's happening here. I don't think they're fundamentally changing maybe your belief on something. There might just be some like, oh, it was fine.
Right.
I didn't feel that way, but that would be my action. Yeah. Okay. All right. Here we go. Just real fast. I'm going to try to pull these open and we'll go for it. I hope you guys enjoy as I have so many of them and maybe we can filter this as I'm going. But
do we each answer? Does one of us, do we alternate? How should we do this?
However the spirit leads. Okay. Did you find it easy to adjust to the new Cassie? And again, I haven't read these before. How stressed should we expect to be? I very much found it easy to adjust to new Cassie. I think she did a great job. I think she looks more like what Cassie would look like at her age. And I think she carries a lot of the same heart that the original young Cassie had, who is, by the way, my favorite child actor in the MCU.
Totally agree. I was totally happy with Catherine Newton. Could not be happier.
I never thought to myself like, wow, I wish this was a different casting. I would love to know if this movie actually feels like the start of a new phase or if it fits tonally with phase 4 or phase 3. It definitely feels like the start of a new phase while having the anticipation of a phase 3 movie.
I would say it's tonally like phase 4 in that in the kind of like big ideas and you know like we're phase 4 is much less grounded than phase 3 and this is not a very
grounded phase. And I can't remember where I said this now. I can't remember if I said it here or if I said it next week or whatever or we lost the file. This definitely feels like the line of demarcation though of like, to me, this felt clear of like, we are now going forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like in that way, it truly did feel like a start of phase 5. Whereas most of phase 4 was either new characters or legacy characters reflecting on what had happened. This felt like legacy character that's going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I'm also just, since we mentioned phase 4, I would recommend folks, if you have, you know, if you're on your own rewatch, it's not like you have to sprint through it, but if you're looking for some homework to do in addition to the comic stuff that we're doing on the on the Patreon, I would really encourage people to rewatch Loki because.
Second question, if any, how much does Loki series play into this film?
Wow, yeah, I mean, like a good bit, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, not,
we can't answer that specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say like if you haven't seen it, you're not. Like you're not going to be confused. But I think that if it's fresh on your mind, you'll appreciate it.
Knee jerk reaction, which is what we just said we wouldn't do, in the rankings department. Where would you put it and how does it compare to other trilogies? We're not going to rank it. Look, Infinity War is my number one, has an 82% Rotten Tomatoes.
Right. Yeah.
That's hard for me to reconcile that somebody could think that movie was garbage or rotten.
Yeah.
I'm nervous that Infinity War, Black Widow, and now Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania are going to be the three movies that I am so much higher than the average consensus. So I'll say this. I think the critic score is going to be like 75%, and I would say it was a top tier for me.
Yeah, I would say it's
so it does not match the 75% for me.
It's one of my
It's one of my 10 favorite films.
Yeah, yeah. MCU. It's one of my favorite Marvel films out the gate, I think. I just had fun. I loved it.
Last thing on the fun department. The way WandaVision leaned into the grief is what I was going to say. The way it leaned into the grief so heavily. That's one of the reasons I respect that show so much, is like they went into that. This is the same thing for me, but with fun.
Right.
It's like we forget that that's another emotion that you can, like another experience you can have with these films. Yeah. It doesn't just have to be heavy or dark. There are, like, I need all of that. Right. I want the balance of the darkness and the brute violence and the dark stories and the hopelessness. And then I want the grief and having to sit with that. And that's what Phase 4 did so well. But also, I want to have fun sometimes. Like, some of the characters can be in a good spot.
Right, right.
And that was fun.
Yeah, it's a blockbuster. And there are emotional moments within the context of this.
It's not cheap, but.
But yeah, it never feels shallow is an important thing. Like, I think if, don't equate fun with shallow. It's fun because it takes you on a meaningful story. It's about, like, it's a movie that's about family and about these relationships that we've been exploring for the past two films. And that's handled really well, but in a way that's also, like, hilarious and thrilling at times. I mean, legitimately thrilling at times.
In a non-spoilery way, I'd love to know if Kang reveals anything about an older project, as in, like, are there any current MCU projects now better or different in light of Quantumania? For example, the way WandaVision made Civil War more compelling for Wanda's character. Without spoiling anything, I'm not going to get into this one because I don't want to spoil anything. I don't think so.
Not really. Don't look
because
for that.
It goes forward.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, like, you know, again, and this is He Who Remains versus Kang here, and I think that that's maybe the. That's the best answer to that question.
Loki, I guess. Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think.
I'm curious about Beck's score. And this is why I love this question. By the way, these first questions are all from our Friends from Work Plusers. So
nice.
If you want to be read first, be a Friends from Work Plus. Is he able to work with his heisty Ant-Man theme, or does it have to have like a very different tone or something different? And you'll hear me talk about this at length next week. I love it so much. This might have been, upon first listen, his masterpiece. Because here's why. The first theme is already unbelievable, right? The dun, 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 dun. But the whole point of that theme is he was writing it to be a heist. Like, remember when I interviewed him and I said, I'm sneaking around. And that's what I said to him. He's like, totally. That's, remember I said, like, you're becoming the heist guy. He's like, I'm totally becoming the heist guy. I cannot believe how well he does this. And props to Giacchino for doing this, where he can take the same physical notes.
Yeah.
And he can take those, but if he's playing them in the heist thing, it's like playful. But in this movie, he takes that theme. I have chills right now. I literally have chills on camera. He takes that theme and he goes like, he makes it bombastic. Bum, 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 bum. And it's like, and then he takes it and goes, do, do. Do, 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 do. And it's all of a sudden depressing and so sad. And that's my favorite stuff. Well, and it's so good, dude. It's like he has a dark theme for, like, he has a spinoff of that for Cassie and for Kang.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and like there's kind of a quantum realm theme I noticed that's really cool. But also, one of my favorite themes of his has been the Wasp theme that he added, like in addition to kind of ramping up the Ant-Man
just wait
theme,
till you see like dude, some of the musical
oh the Wasp like that one like go right now if you're curious, our Journey Through the MCU playlist has a sampling of a ton of Christoph Waltz stuff, but yeah, search Journey Through the MCU on the Friends from Work Spotify. But there's a song that you should listen to right now that is the what it's not over till the Wasp lady sings,
yeah
and it's just then basically the overture for that Ant-Man and the Wasp score. And yeah, it's that, man, it reminds me of Giacchino in that, like, the third installment, the difference being I was a bigger fan of Beck's work on the first films than I was of Giacchino's work on the first two Spider-Man films. But in the same way that Giacchino, like, brings home to this, like, yeah, what you were saying, like, makes things that were initially playful now really meaningful. Beck does that, but much more, like, cinematic in scope. It's instead of being, like, heart-wrenching, it's, like,
people think that we just say positive things about all composers. But for me, I'll just out myself. Like, Beck is my very top of the MCU. Like, yeah. He's 1 through 5, and he's not 5 or 4, probably. Like, he's somewhere in there.
It's I think about Beck's scores the way that I think about Daredevil comics, which is, like, if you look at some of the most, if you want the most consistently good MCU scores.
Side note, that's another example. John Pazino, the Daredevil theme is... Ding, 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 ding,
yeah.
Ding, boom, boom. But when he finally gets a suit at the end of the first season, he does a whole... And I asked him about this. Whole orchestra just falls... You know,
yeah,
and it's like...
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden it's like... So I love when they can do that. Yeah, yeah. Love when they can do that. Okay, here we go. Now we need to really blaze, okay? These are on Instagram. How does the movie set the stage for future events? Can't spoil anything plot-wise, but it definitely feels like we're going forward.
Yeah.
Is this the beginning of a new dynasty?
Yeah.
Same question. No answer, and we're going forward. How many Kangs do you foresee in the MCU? Like, how many Kangs do you foresee the MCU introducing? Sorry, that was hard for me to say. And which ones would you like to see?
Yeah.
No comment. Yeah. No comment. I love that. Should the MCU have started with a younger Hank so next gen could have been Scott? No.
Yeah.
No. Because Paul Rudd is already incredible. He doesn't age, first of all. So yeah, he doesn't look like he's old.
Just in the movie, in the press conference.
You have the ability now to pass that gene to Cassie.
Yeah.
Potentially. That's not a spoiler. I'm just saying, like, she's the younger generation there. And Hank still shows up in this film.
Far and away my favorite Michael Douglas performance in the MCU. So I think, because I came in, we were talking about that. Like, what's the role for Hank in this? And yeah, great, great Hank movie.
One word to describe each main character's arc in the movie. Spoiler free. Oh, gosh. Sorry about this truck again. Golly.
Yeah. I don't trust myself to.
Do this. That's too dangerous of a question because. Come on. Was it awesome?
Yeah. I mean,
how many times did you pass out? None, but we were pumped. Is Jan. Oh, you're going to love this. Is Janet's role going to satisfy those who felt like Pfeiffer was underutilized previously?
Oh, my gosh.
10 trillion percent.
Yeah.
We included Michelle Pfeiffer as a standout in our original tweet. And I call her out next week.
Which I like. What I love about that is I totally felt like she was both underutilized and just not quite locked in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And so... I was not coming into this with high hopes for Michelle Pfeiffer. And if anything, I was a little like, because I don't think she was bad in Ant-Man and the Wasp, but because I didn't connect to that role, I was a little bit like, are they going to lean too much into that? And I just didn't. She, right out the gate in this one, is just killing it all the way through.
I'm skipping a few of these because there's so many and some of them are asking the same kind of question, but MODOK. I just want to say one thing about MODOK. This is actually one thing I think I can influence before the film. It's so funny. Let yourself embrace how goofy the character is. Please do not go into this thinking like MODOK needs to be some... Do you know what I'm saying?
Well,
expectation on having fun with the film. Don't set your expectation on
Put
your hope. Yeah. worth in MODOK.
Don't put your worth in MODOK. And the funny thing there is to the people that do, which already existed, I think I saw online some controversy, but like way back when they first released images, it's just so funny because like Peyton Reed was talking about this in the presser, like MODOK is a ridiculous character. It's a giant face. Like, so the idea come to that character as though it's like
with any kind of seriousness to it,
right? Like as though they're adapting like a Victorian novel or something. Like I don't but yeah, man, one of my favorite Jeff Loveness and Peyton Reed both called out MODOK as one of their favorite parts of the film. And I was, because I view him as sort of a just kind of silly character in the comics that I don't feel very passionately about, I was always curious why that was. And
there's, I feel like I'm looking at five questions about MODOK.
Wow.
I loved it, but this is coming from someone who knows nothing about the comics. I don't know anything about MODOK other than it's a totally goof thing, like goofy looking thing.
I do wonder, I mean, there was the Patton Oswalt show. I don't know how many of our listeners watched that and are sort of bringing that in.
This is weird to answer. Any Luis, and no is the answer. Luis is not in the film.
Yeah.
And Michael Pena is literally probably our favorite part, maybe outside of Paul Rudd, of the first two films.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't mean this as a slight. You don't miss him. You'll understand. Like, he wasn't needed for the film.
Right.
In my opinion.
No. I agree. I mean, I didn't even think about it until the end. Like, whenever I was like, oh, wait, yeah, we missed this whole chunk. Because I was just and watching the credits. Yeah.
Quickly, to wrap this up, who were you most surprised with their performance? For me, it's Pfeiffer, I think. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I think the other one would be Michael Douglas for me.
All right, to my wife who wrote, did you get Chipotle or Five Guys? I got Five Guys, sweetheart. She said, maybe you want to get Chipotle just if it sits a little lighter before the theater. But I was like, no, I haven't eaten since 6 a.m. How's the CGI?
I'll let you take that.
I was really hoping they managed to make the quantum realm look good and real. It's phenomenal. Now, let me say something really quickly. We watched this in IMAX, a great theater.
Yeah.
We watched it in IMAX, so the score is a huge impact on IMAX for me because there's awesome sub, like great bass coverage. So like the score, the big ones hit you. Like you feel them in your chest. Like literally a couple of times my feet were rumbling.
Yeah.
Which I love. So the score is enhanced in IMAX. Visually, I thought it was, what do you think? I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, obviously they're in a quantum realm, but the imagination and the way they pull that off, like, yeah, it is a green screen.
Yeah.
They're not on location in the quantum realm, but it's believable to me.
One thing that I love about that I don't even think we mentioned in the initial reactions is, do you remember how, you know, as much as the first two Ant-Man films were largely, like we said, kind of ground level and accessible, we did have those peeks into the quantum realm in both films that got like kind of trippy and more Doctor Strange-esque in the visuals. And one thing that I know MCU fans have seized on for years now is that like little clip that we get in Ant-Man and the Wasp when Hank is shrinking down to go rescue Janet. And we see like what looks like little cities in the background.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
And I love that they, I mean, we get that. Like we don't return to that exact moment, but
it carries the similar vibe.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it feels like if you got to zoom in on those and see, and like, again, to go back to the beginning, like.
And it makes the TVA landscape look more understandable / believable, you know, hand by the window. Right.
I thought about that too. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, which makes, yeah, I mean, I think that was another surprise of mine, just looking at what I would have expected from Peyton Reed, both like the degree to which he like really went for it with sources and with kind of introducing various elements, but also just the execution.
Last couple here, a lot of questions on Kang. This one in particular, I think is interesting. Does this do justice to Kang or Kang justice the same way Guardians does to Thanos? And I would say, you'll hear us talk about this next week, it's better.
Yeah.
It's better. The way Thanos shows up with Guardians. And I want to bring that one up now because I also want to tie in the visual aspect you were talking about. One thing you point out in the episode next week to me, which is really interesting, is like, not only are we stoked about Kang as a character, and not only are we stoked about Jonathan Majors as the actor to play that character for the next however long, but also the fact that it's just refreshing. This guy is a human, so you don't have to do any of the visual tricks. They're amazing with Thanos, but like you don't have to have any of this stupid She-Hulk debate because it's a human portraying this, which is actually going to be really refreshing, I think, on the visual front and on the Kang front. So in that way, visually – and the tone and stuff, this is a better entrance for Kang than Thanos was to Guardians.
I don't even think that's debatable.
No, and I would say, like, one thing about Thanos is, even aside from appearance, I don't think that Thanos showed up in the, in, like, we think of Thanos as compelling because of Infinity War.
The last two movies.
Yeah, and it's different, right? Because that was the same character, and in part, like, again, to go read kind of what Majors has been talking about with He Who Remains versus Kang, you are getting different variants, but even then, it's just, like, it feels, the difference to me is, I think it took Marvel a while to figure out who Thanos was in the MCU. Yes, and correct. How they wanted to use him.
But now...
Yeah, they know exactly. It feels like they have a plan. And I would just say, like, on, because I didn't say this earlier, I am, have been since Loki, but am, like, unbelievably stoked that Marvel has tied themselves to Majors for the multiverse saga. Like,
yeah, we just watched the press conference, and it only reiterates that thought.
It is, like... He's incredible, like, as an actor. He's one of my favorite actors
in this generation right now. But also off-screen, he's bought in.
So bought in. And I just feel like you will come away from this movie. I think even, honestly, the stuff that that we've talked about, like, I think even if people dislike parts of this movie, no one's going to have an issue with Major's performance. And I think that, like, we've talked so long about having, right, like, a villain that you can, like, move ahead with, and we've never had that, because even Thanos, it was like that he was in the background more than anything. But, like, I think it's going to be it's the best decision that Kevin Feige and co have made in a spell, I think.
Right, because even, like, Gore, if, like, you probably couldn't have gotten Christian Bale to sign on for 5 years,
right,
as a character. So the fact that you got an actor like this to also commit and buy in to the same degree to make this, like, his performance that, like, he's remembered by,
right,
is crazy, and it's awesome. Last thing.
Wait. Can I say one more thing about Majors? Just because I love it. He said this in the press conference, and I loved it. He was talking about how he approached Kang, and again, doing it with so much sincerity. You know, like, it does not feel put on, or like he's somehow viewing this as a lesser project than his other performances. But he talked about his process and how, to him, it's like he talked about, like, doing Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And he talked about how it's like learning the structure of the character and learning, like, inside and out, like, what he said. Like, I think he talked about the, like, the backbone of the character, but essentially, like, studying it, doing a deep dive, figuring that out, but then also figuring out the characters and the actors playing those characters that you're going to be with. Like, he talked about the deep dive into, like, Tom Hiddleston ahead of Loki, and then that with Paul Rudd, and, like, how he seems so dedicated on, like, a level that we've only seen with a handful of, like, again, I think so many Marvel performers have bought in. We were saying that earlier, but then there's, like, a top tier of folks like Tom Hiddleston that are, like, they love it. They love it, and they, like, are doing their own deep dives and mining their own, like, past projects. And, like, he's bringing that level to it. But then he also talked about how he's bringing this play to it, where it's, like, you figure out your character, and then there's almost, like, the like, quasi-improv element of, like, now you're just playing, and you see where the scene goes. And, like, it explains so much about what I love from his performances, because they feel just so electric and alive, and it's, like, he is a guy that I think understands, because he does the work, he understands the character that he's portraying, and he's also there in this very visceral way. Like, there's a presence of the performance that I just, I'm such a fan, and I can't wait to see him in Creed 3. I can't wait to see him in more Marvel movies. I think people are really going to love him as Kang here.
In closing, you brought up something that I think is actually a fascinating discussion, maybe for another time. But, you know, a lot of times I think the popular opinion from the outside of non-MCU fans is that Marvel, like, really had it all together in their planning and their details back when it was, like, phase 1, 2, 3. Right. That was, like, their perfect plan. And now it's so scatterbrained and, like, things are getting loose and stuff.
Right.
Having seen this movie and then listen, you talk about Thanos a second ago. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that I could make an argument that it might actually be in some ways a little bit the inverse of that, what people think, in that, yes, in the first three phases, they knew they wanted to anchor it around Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and their characters. Mm-hmm. And they knew they wanted to anchor it around the Infinity Stones and that at some point somebody would want to get them. But even those, they didn't know that until, I don't know, 2013, 14.
Yeah.
So even that, they didn't start with that. And then they retroactively then were able to like go back and make the Tesseract something more important. And they were able to make Thanos like, oh, he was actually behind more of this earlier on.
It's like part of the genius of Endgame is that it did that work.
Right. And we talked about that in Guardians 1 where even Gunn was like, yeah, they asked me to include Thanos in this. Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't the first movie they made. It's not like that was like the groundwork laid and now we know to go.
Right.
So ironically now, especially starting with this film, like phase four, new characters, like who knows how they're going to bring that all together yet. Right. I don't know that. But starting with this film, they now have the opposite luxury, which is like you now know that these people are signed on for X amount of time and you can already now project every project for the next two phases of like where it's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't have that luxury when they didn't know if it was going to work with Iron Man. So that's actually kind of wild.
Yeah. And no, I think that's a good way of putting it. And which, by the way, in case anyone's listening to this and they think we just spoiled the movie because we're talking about more Kang appearances, we're talking about that because that's like we have the film called Kang Dynasty, and Kevin Feige's really talked about.
Well, and also let me remind you, he spoiler for Loki, he dies in Loki, and yet you see him in this trailer,
right?
So that's my point.
So yeah, that's not that's no commentary on like what happens in this movie with this version of Kang that we're getting. I just don't want, and because some people may not realize why we're assuming that there are future Jonathan Majors performances.
Well, also it's called Kang Dynasty, so I am assuming that they wouldn't name it that early. The last question was, do you think that Scott Lang's podcast was inspired by the Friends from Work podcast? Maybe.
Almost certainly.
Yeah. In fact, at the press conference, he like took a few minutes to actually talk about that.
Yeah.
Like we weren't even going to include that storyline until I heard Friends from Work. And then,
which
we were like, you know, Paul, you don't have to bring that up, but
whatever. He insists, you know, and when Paul insists, that's what I always say about Paul. When he insists, you know, it was funny. Jimmy, Randall Park, was the moderator for the press conference, and it became the like ongoing joke by the end that everyone, because all the main cast was there, and by the end everyone was talking about how they based their performances on the work that Randall Park did as Jimmy
Woo. I do love Jimmy Woo.
Him and the Wasp. So
and WandaVision.
And WandaVision.
All right, guys, we'll go into it expecting to have fun and just let yourself have fun. That's my last plea. And we do this every time, but I'm going to do it again. That intro credit roll rolls, and I know I'm Pavlov's dogs, but I in that theater, in that moment with you, I realized, again, you only get so many of these. Like, it's not like promised to us that these are going to be infinitely good forever.
Yeah.
So, like, that started rolling. I'm like, let's go. Like, I'm going to enjoy this movie while I'm here, and I sure as heck did. So I hope you guys can do that as well. There's so many logistical things we have to get into that I'll save for a different time and post online. But like I said, next week is our initial reactions episode. Enjoy the movie next weekend. Listen to the episode when you are finished with that film. If you want a last minute prep for this film and you're listening to this, go on our YouTube page and check out our saga so far and a little friendly reminder we did, a shortened version of like something you could show your parents if you want to take them or your friend to the theater and they've never seen any Ant-Man film. That was our goal of making that. So just you can find us on all socials and on YouTube and TikTok at the FFW podcast everywhere.
And just so you know, and this time around was sort of unique for various reasons. But yeah, the saga so far here is intended more for MCU fans. It's just like a fun recap that we did. But yeah, if you have folks that are not necessarily MCU fans that you're trying to kind of sell on coming to the movie with you, or just people that, you know, aren't going to take the amount of time to watch the full saga so far, the friendly reminder is designed exclusively for them.
And we really laid that out at the end of next week's episode, which is a long marathon, 2-hour episode next week. But at the end of it, we really go through some of that stuff. And all the typical stuff. If you can, follow us on social media and check out our website, theffwpodcast.com. There are a few shirts there for sale. You can donate to our podcast and help support the Friends from Work podcast. And there's also a contact form where you can reach out to us and you can tell us if you're Bob Iger and you're trying to sue us. But we try to answer all those messages as well, which is actually a fun part of this. Join our Slack if you want to get involved with like 600 or 700 other people that are just diehard MCU fans and just like hear the Marvel news and chime in on this conversation. But yeah, reach out to us and we can work some of that stuff into the next episode and stuff like that. As always, please tell your friends about the podcast, subscribe to it, rate, review, and then yeah, have fun. We'll see you next week, right? Yeah. We'll be right here talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, next week here on Friends from Work.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.